Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith podcast for November 2015. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and today we are going to talk about the movie Room. You know, we are entering into probably my favorite time of the year as a film buff. You have this season here, begins in December, but really gets to the heart of it in January and February, where all of these really meaty dramas come out of the woodwork. And if you know me, you know I love a good drama, probably more than any other genre. Give me a drama any day. Drives my wife crazy. She loves comedies, always wants to watch a comedy, and I'm always wanting to watch something that has that weight of the world to it. And this is the time for that, because the Oscars are coming up in February, and studios are just pumping out their best dramas because they want votes. I mean, people are tallying up the votes for the Oscars, and so this is the time where you start seeing these movies come out, and already we've had quite a few that are making their way to theaters, and one of them is Room. And Room has been on my radar for over a month now, ever since I was sitting in this waiting room and reading this magazine, just read this review that was just glowing. I mean, just this stunning review. And I wrote it down. And I was like, I got to see that movie. And then I kept hearing more and more good things about it. And I got so pumped. And finally, it showed up at the local indie theater by me. And I went and saw it. And I have got to say, Room did not disappoint. This is a very good movie, worthy of discussion, worthy of an entire podcast. So that is our topic for today. Let's discuss Room. So there's really no question about it. The premise of Room is depressing. I've already talked to several people and about the movie, and basically, you know, right off the bat, they've seen the trailer, or they read something about it, and they were like, yeah, pass, sounds like a downer, forget it. And I get it, okay? Admittedly, the plot makes this movie seem like one of the most depressing movies on the face of the planet, but I'm here to tell you that that is not the case at all. But here we go. I have to tell you what the movie's about. The basic premise is that Room is about a mother and son who are living together in this woodshed as prisoners because they have been kidnapped by this kidnapper, demented guy who's basically created this space for them to live. They are completely locked in, both inside and outside, with a keypad entry. So you have to use a keypad to get in, get out. And this guy has basically allowed them to make the space their own. They've decorated it. They've got rugs. They've got furniture. They have a TV. They can cook. But there's prisoners. They're prisoners in there. And the only window is this skylight up on the roof. And basically, the mother and son are just, they live in this room all day. And then at night, the son goes and he sleeps in this little cupboard area because she wants him to kind of be separate, because that's when the kidnapper comes in from whatever he does all day and ends up sleeping with the mom, and he just sleeps right there like he's some sort of family figure, and then you know, gets out of the room and the next morning, and there they are, trapped still in this room. And this is the life that this mother and son are living. And, you know, they can request things, like they request clothes and vitamins and things they need, and the guy does it. And he's not, what's really creepy about it is he's not like a monster, like you would think, like he just comes in and, you know, starts beating them or something. Like he acts like he's a dad and he's a husband, and he's just like this is all normal when it absolutely isn't. The mom is called Ma in the credits. She does not actually give a name. She was kidnapped by this guy when she was like 17. And for a few years, this is the life she lived, is just living as a prisoner alone. And he would come in and at night and rape her. And then out of the byproduct of that, eventually came this son, Jack. And now it's her and Jack. And when we enter the story, Jack is 5 years old. And we see their rituals and their life together in this room. And yeah, so that's the premise. And again, you can obviously see right off the front why a lot of people are like, no thanks, when they hear it. I mean, I get it, right? I mean, I don't think the movie's doing very well at the box office. I haven't checked the official numbers, but I know that the screening that I attended, I was the only one there. So it's a nice private little feature for me. But yeah, I don't think it's doing really well. And I think that's the problem, is the premise is scaring people away. But here's the thing. The movie is not depressing. This is actually an extremely life-affirming film. It's like, it's beautiful. It's alive. It's fresh. And the reason is because they don't dwell on details here, okay? Like, you know exactly what you need to know to understand the premise and to understand what's going on, but this is not a graphic movie. They do not linger on lurid details. And so, really, this is a movie at its heart about a mother and a son and their relationship and their love for each other. That's what this movie is really about. That's what sticks with you when it's all said and done. It's not, you know, something morbid and something horrible. And it's just, it's about this mother who's trying under horrific circumstances beyond comprehension to make a life for this boy, her boy. And that relationship is what gives meaning to this whole film. And she's trying to make a home out of a prison, right? And it's just, it's beautiful. And you see, so you don't walk out of the movie depressed. You walk out of it, I did anyway, just grateful for life, grateful for love and meaning in the world, in the midst of what is often a very broken world. And that's what sticks with you. So the premise is depressing, but it is not a depressing film. The actress who plays Ma is Brie Larson. And let me just say, this performance, I mean, it is a lock for a Best Actress nomination. There is no question. She will be in that Fateful Five come February at the Oscars. She's stunning. I mean, it's an absolutely raw, gut-wrenching performance. She bears her entire soul for you to see, and it's a game changer. And so it was incredible. I don't actually know Brie Larson. I mean, she's not a household name by any stretch. I was looking over her film history on IMDb, and I actually have seen many of the movies she's been in, but I don't remember her in it. So I think this is the first time she's had the chance to really come into her own and helm a movie to the point where you will remember her and remember her face. And it's like, yeah, that woman can act, because she can. And there's really no glamour to this role at all, which I always find really impressive. And Hollywood can be very egocentric, and women and men always want to look their best and look like, you know, blow people away with that. But really, I mean, if you think about the premise, I mean, this is not a woman who makes herself up in the morning and puts on really nice clothes. She's a prisoner in a one-room hell, basically. So, I mean, I don't think she wears any makeup while she's in the room, and her clothes are shabby, and there's not a lot of great hygiene there, because they're allowed to brush their teeth. I mean, I think they have toothbrushes and everything, but, I mean, clearly, just with the environment, something's not right, because she, like, early on, a tooth falls out of her. So, I mean, this is a very raw performance for an actress, and it's a woman who's trying to stay alive, keep finding a reason to keep going for her son. The boy, Jack, is played by an actor named Jacob Tremblay, and I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else. And I don't know, I've got to be honest, kid actors, it's just always hard for me, because I just never know what is, like, real emotion, what's fake. I mean, you know, there's times where Jack, like, he'll be just fine, and then all of a sudden he'll break out in like, hysterical about something. And it's like, I think, would my kids do that, go from, like, 0 to 10 like that? But then you think, like, yeah, but this kid has been in this room as a prisoner his entire life. That's all he's known for 5 years of his life. His whole existence has been in this room. So how can you really predict emotions are just going to be flying out from this boy. This isn't any normal circumstance, and who knows? But as far as acting is concerned, I mean, the kid nails it. I mean, this is another great performance. I mean, the movie is through his eyes. He is the movie, right? We see everything play out through from his vantage point, and so he's the emotional center, and it's incredibly important that he can carry the film, and he does. He really delivers. So Jacob Tremblay is great in this, and what's really awesome about him is what ties the film together are these moments where he'll have these kind of soliloquies about life from his perspective. So when he's in the room, he'll talk about this is my lamp and this is that, and he'll describe things that are in his world. And later on in the film, he describes kind of the world at large. And so there's these little really poetic moments where he's describing things from his perspective, and it's beautiful, and it really brings meaning to everything that's going on, and it makes the film kind of rise to a level of art. Like those little moments, those asides, it really sticks with you after it's over, and this is, there's just great acting across the board in this. There's Joan Allen is in this, William H. Macy. There's a lot of great performances. There's no shortage of them. But at its heart, this is Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay's movie. Their relationship as the mother and son and the way they play off each other is incredible. And I loved watching it. It's a relationship that honestly is going to stick with me for a long time because it's that real and that raw, and these felt like real people. So I want to dive into some specifics now, and I'm not going to spoil anything for you that the trailer doesn't give away, so don't fear. But I know if you're like me, you like going in completely fresh, not knowing anything, and I get it. If that's you, you know, feel free to part ways. But again, I'm not going to give away anything that you wouldn't see in the trailer and that you wouldn't see from a simple plot synopsis. But basically, you know, Room provides one of the signature moments for me that I've seen all year, one of the most jaw-dropping, visceral moments of 2015. So, the movie starts out in this room, and you see the mother and son, and you see their routines, and you see this, the kidnapper, they call him Old Nick in the movie, and you see how that all works, and you learn to understand the particulars of what's happened before, that she's tried to escape before, she's tried to come up with plans, nothing's worked. It's really hard because, I mean, it's not like you can just, you know, whack the guy over the head and kill him when he enters the room, because then you're still trapped in the room. They don't know how to get out, they don't know the passcode, so they have to come up with a way to try to get out of the room. And they do, and I won't give away what the specifics of the plan is and how they do it, but eventually there is a transition from the room setting, which takes up probably the first good 30-40 minutes of the movie, into the world at large. And that transition right there is just one of the most amazing transitions that I've seen in ages. The escape itself is really nerve-wracking and suspenseful. It's one of those moments where I found myself self-consciously all of a sudden, like, realizing that I had at some point gone from a slouch to literally on the edge of my seat with my mouth gaping open because I was so into it. And then, but just the way the music comes together, and you see it through Jack's eyes, right? All he's ever known is this one room, is this one small confined setting, and all of a sudden, there it is, the world with trees and clouds and the whole other universe exploding before him. And the way that they do that is breathtaking. It truly is. You go from claustrophobia to paradise, basically, and there's this rush of emotion, and it's just the highlight of the movie here for me so far. So that's incredible. And I guess if there's any minor problem to say about the movie, it's that it reaches the emotional climax early on, about halfway through the movie. I mean, that's the climax of the movie, and you could almost say there's really nowhere to go after that. I mean, you know, once you've escaped the problem, the dilemma, then, you know, where do you go? And how can that not be a slightly a letdown from this really interesting scenarios that you've developed early on? But it's not. I mean, it's not like it goes from being a really exciting movie to a really boring movie by any stretch. The movie never is boring, and it's never bad. It's just that it doesn't reach the same heights as it does in that that climax towards the middle. But at its heart, the movie, again, is about this mother and her son, and that carries all the way through, and their relationship is continues to be the focus and the centerpiece, and the problems that they go through trying to adjust to the real world is fascinating, and it continues to be a very good movie. But I mean, if you're talking about like what keeps it from being a perfect film, a masterpiece, it would probably be that, is that it's hard to maintain that level of momentum all the way through. So, you know, it goes from, it probably lands somewhere in the strong A minus category for me, but still, it's absolutely one of the best movies I've seen this year. I think right now it's sitting at number 5 on my top 10 of 2015 on the site, and I think it'll be there when the dust settles, right there in the middle of the pack of the top 10 movies of the year. So absolutely essential viewing. Okay, don't let the premise scare you away. This is not a morbid film. This is a beautiful film. You will be glad you took the journey with these characters, and you'll never forget this mom and her boy and what they went through together. That relationship towers over everything, and it will stick with you for a long time to come. From a thematic perspective, there's a lot going on here. Now, I've already covered the mother and the son dynamic, which is a great reminder, especially as a parent. I'm a parent of 3. Some of you listening might be parents, and it's just something to remember that you kind of need to be reminded of when you're a parent, because your kids can drive you crazy sometimes, and a lot of the time, and pretty much every day, you have that moment where you're banging your head against the wall and wondering why you ever entered this journey of parenthood. But it's such a privilege to be a parent. It's a bond like nothing else you can possibly experience in life. I mean, of course, getting married and having a wife or a husband is another completely unique thing, but there's nothing like being a parent, and it's a privilege because it's God-breathed. We're children of God. God made us. The Bible describes him as our father, and we get to experience a little bit of that, what it's like to create, what it's like to nurture and be over something in a way that is good and honoring, and it's beautiful, and it blows me away just how I think of how much I love my kids, and how no matter how just unbelievably awful they can be, and how I want to pull my hair out at them, and just like I look at them sometimes like what are you doing? But always at the end of the day, you know, when it's bedtime or when everything settles down, I just look at them and I can't stop loving them. I mean, I can't. They're my kids, and until the day I die, until there's no more breath in me, I will love my kids, because there is something inside of me that just screams out, I love you. Every time I see them, my heart is overwhelmed with love for them, no matter what they've done, no matter how much of a terror they've been. And if God has that kind of a love for us, even a fraction, if our love is even a fraction of this perfect love that God has for us, I mean, praise God, right? I mean, that is something to be excited about. One of the Psalms says, as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on us. And I know that compassion that I have with my kids, and that's coming from a father who's extremely broken and sinful, and about the most imperfect parent you can possibly be. And God says that just like that compassion I have, so God has compassion on us. Wow. And we see it in Room. Jack can be a little devil sometimes. I mean, he's 5 years old, all right? And he gets into mischief, and he drives his mom crazy, and she just wants to kick him out of the room, but she can't. They're stuck together, and so they have to make it. But then in the next scene, they're laughing in the tub together, and that's how it is. That's what being a parent is no matter what happens, no matter how much you want to scream, this is... You love your kids, and they love you back, and it's an extremely special bond that is bigger than all of us, and because God designed it, and so that was a great reminder in the movie. And moving even a little bit bigger into, but still staying within relationships, this quote really stuck out at me. One of the characters is talking to Jack because Jack has this really long hair. He's never cut it because he's never really had the opportunity to, being in the room for 5 years. And he refers to his hair as his strong. It's like he pretends that's where his strength is, like Samson. And so he calls his hair as strong. And one of the characters says to him that, you know, no one is actually strong alone. We all need each other to be strong. And I thought that was a really profound quote, that really, you know, we like to pretend that we have our strong inside of us, but really we're each other's strong. And you know, as Westerners especially, we love the old raising yourselves up by your bootstrap stories and the self-made men and all that, which we all know is a big myth, that no one is actually self-made. I mean, we've come from parents, first of all, who've devoted their life and their energy into making sure that we have an existence. Most of the jobs that we've earned have been through family members or a friend of a friend and connections we've had. So this whole self-made man, even if you raised yourself up by your bootstraps and you did everything on your own and you didn't have any help, you were still created by God, and it is a privilege that you even have breath in your body. So we need to move away from that myth because it is a lie, and we need to realize that we need each other and that God has created us as relational beings because he is a relational being. Just, that's what's amazing is that before time began, God was in relationship with the Trinity, with Jesus, with the Holy Spirit. They were a family. They were self-sufficient. They had this love and this connection between the three of them, and now they've invited us in to be a part of that family. That's what the gospel is. That salvation is the ability to be part of God's family, and we get to invite others to be a part of this. And God is a fiercely relational being who loves us personally. And that's always boggled my mind, that the God of the universe knows my name, and he knows your name and everything about you. And he loves you personally. He's not aloof. He's not this deity that we come and make sacrifices to and hope that he's not mad at us. Like, God loves you to the point of knowing every single hair that is on your head, every fiber of your being. God loves and is passionately for you. That's the God we serve, and that's incredible, and that's different than any other God that any other religion presents. We have a God who loves us to the point of even dying for us on a cross. And so this idea of relationships is so key. I mean, it's in the movie, you have Ma, who for years was fighting this fight alone against this brutal kidnapper guy getting raped, and she didn't have anyone to cry out to, and I just can't imagine the despair. She must have been suicidal at times, but then Jack comes along, and suddenly she has a reason to keep going. She has this other person in her life to build her up and that she can talk to, and that is where this life is kindled, this all of a sudden, this desire to keep going and not give up and not give into despair. It's through relationships. And they're so important in our life. There's such power in our friendships and our loved ones. And when you think about one truth that I've been really hitting home lately is the power of confession. to other people. There's tremendous power in that. The Bible commands us to confess our sins to one another. It's not a suggestion, and I think that's really where the power to break the strongholds of sin is when we move away from trying to deal with our sin on our own, and I got this, and I'll just keep trying to figure it out, and when we reach out to someone else and say, dude, I messed up and I need help. Can I be accountable to you? Can I tell you what I'm actually going through and be completely honest and real? And when we do that with each other, as I've had the privilege of doing recently with a few other guys, and telling them what's really going on, and then having them tell me back, you know, keep going. Don't give up. It's okay. Pick yourself up. And God loves you, and that is forgiven, and you've confessed it, and it's over. And hearing that is powerful. And it's not that we stay content in our sin and that we just dwell there. We want God to heal us and bring us closer to himself and away from sin, but the ability to be honest with each other and confess freely and hear God's mercy through another is, I think, incredibly powerful. And that's just the beauty of and the value of relationships, and that is something that stuck with me when I was watching Room and seeing this mother and son interact, and how much power is transferred between the two of them in the midst of being able to endure something that is almost unendurable when you think about it. They were able to because they had each other. But there was also one truth that really screamed at me more than anything else. And it was about halfway through the movie that this light bulb clicked in my head. It was kind of this aha moment. And I was thinking that Room is really this powerful metaphor for our flesh and the state that we were in when we were lost, and the state that we still find ourselves in when we pull away from God and go back to the world. So when Ma and Jack were prisoners, I mean, their life was horrible. Absolutely. They were stuck in this one room. They couldn't leave. They were constricted. They were confined. They were trapped. But yet, there was also a little bit of a simplicity to their life that had some benefits. Like, they knew what to expect every day. They didn't place a lot of expectations on any day because they didn't have anywhere to go and things to do. They basically made the most out of simple things, and they learned to appreciate the simple things and find beauty in that. And then when they were free, suddenly, boom, they're in this massive open universe, and suddenly they're just peanuts in this new reality. And they all of a sudden have choices to make, and they have places they have to be, and they have things they have to think about that they didn't have to think about before. And freedom can be a scary thing, which is weird, and it's kind of a paradox, but it's true. And in some ways, life is actually harder for them outside of the room. And that's something I think they both realize. You see them realize this later on in the film, and there's actually a little bit of a longing to go back there. Jack even says that at one point, if they can go back. And I think that's true too. When you're a Christian and you are in this walk daily, you find the same paradox. So we know as believers that God has rescued us from a room-like reality. We were prisoners of the world, of the devil. We were slaves to our flesh, slaves to the enemy, and God destroyed those chains once and for all. On Calvary, he set us free. We are now completely free in every way, in to enjoy grace, to enjoy beauty, truth. I mean, we are not bound by sin. There is nothing that has dominion over us anymore, nothing that can restrict us. We can now walk in complete freedom and peace with God. And yet, the question is, why then do we keep running back to sin? What is it about sin that keeps pulling us away from God? Why, you would think, if you've experienced this amazing freedom, that you would just walk in that, and that would be that, and you would never want to sin again, and yet we do. Paul says in Romans, I want to do what's right, but I don't do it. And instead, I keep on doing what I hate. Why is that? we keep wanting to re-enslave ourselves and putting chains on ourselves again that have been taken off, that don't even belong there anymore. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, it's because, like, we know, like, we're comfortable with sin. We know what to expect with sin. We know that if we do this thing, that we will find some pleasure in the in that moment, some temporary relief from life's troubles. We kind of, it's a way to take control and be our own God again, and there's some comfort in that. In the short term, it feels kind of nice, but in reality, we're free, and we shouldn't be. We have a much better reality than that. But the truth is that freedom can be hard, just like Ma and Jack experience. God's ways can be challenging. I mean, it's kind of an open-ended book, right? We are following God, and we don't know exactly where He's going to lead us all the time. And we know that one of our requirements to being a disciple of Jesus is we have to take up a cross every day. We have to be willing to give up everything to God. And we know that in the end, that He's not asking us to do things that are just cruel and just to make our lives miserable, that in fact, things that He would ask us to give up, things and places that He would ask us to do and go are actually going to lead us to a more fuller joy and peace than we've ever experienced. They're always for our ultimate benefit. And yet in the moment, they're hard. It's hard to let go of things that we've grown to like and become accustomed to. And so that freedom, that kind of open-ended discipleship is scarier at times than running back to our sin, which is comfortable and kind of something we know and something we can depend on. It reminds me of that Jars of Clay quote from If I Left the Zoo, kind of an underrated album in my mind. But one of the lyrics of that is, they say, crawling around this cage sometimes has its advantages. I think that's really true. Like I was saying, life was simpler for Ma and Jack when they were in room, and yet they were slaves. Like, we see that. Life was simpler for the Israelites in some ways when they were in Egypt. At least they knew that if they did their work and they followed all the orders, that they would have their food at the end of the day, and they would get to sit around the meat pots that they longed for when they were stuck in the desert. And yet you look at them and you're like, yeah, but you were slaves. And in the same way, life is a little bit simpler for us when we sin, because we do this, we know we'll have pleasure, and we get to be in control again, but we also know that that path leads us completely into darkness and despair, and away from everything that we love and everything that is good. We're slaves. So it's this fight we're constantly in as Christians. We need to learn how to enjoy our freedom and stop running back to these oppressive things and stop re-enslaving ourselves. That water that we run to is dirty, and it looks really, really good, and it's sparkling, and it's wonderful, but then we taste it, and we know that it rots our stomach from the inside out, but we keep going back to it, and we have to stop it. I like this quote by C.S. Lewis. He says, "We're half-hearted creatures fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered to us. And like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he can't imagine what's meant by the offer of a holiday at sea, we are far too easily pleased." That is so, so true. We need to stop making our mud pies, and we need to realize that Christ is offering us a gateway into life that is truly life, places and things that we can't even imagine and comprehend, and we need to let it go. We need to let go of our comfort. We need to let go of being God of our life and just give ourselves completely to Jesus, and we will experience the beauty of freedom, and it is not scary. It's wonderful. And you know, if we're honest, the thought of being a captive and being told what to do is kind of easier than that. And following Jesus is hard, but Christ has set us free. And He's never, the thing about Christ is, you know, the Bible, it truly says that we are slaves to righteousness. We are slaves to Jesus. That's true. But it's such a different kind of bondage, isn't it? It's, we're bound to a master who is completely and utterly for us, who always has our best interest in mind, who is never selfish, who is never proud, who doesn't stick our head in our dirt and shame us. He loves us perfectly, unconditionally. That's a master worth following. That's what it's all about. So let's stop. Let's stop giving in to sin and the enemy whose pleasure is our harm, like that song we sing on Sundays sometimes says. And let's give in to Christ. He's leading us to a better place. Ma and Jack should never, ever want to go back to that room. But part of them does. And part of us does too, if we're honest. But we got to keep on the path because it's worth it. So there you have it. That is my reflection on Room. I hope, if you haven't seen it yet, that I've encouraged you to get out there and see it while you still can. Again, it's not doing so well in theaters, so you're not going to have long. So get out there and see it. You will not regret it. It is not depressing. You will thank me for taking the time to journey with these characters, I promise. And this is an exciting time of the year. It's Oscar season, people. And I hope that this is just the beginning of a bunch of great dramas and a bunch of great stories that we have the privilege of entering into over the next couple months. And be sure to join us next month, by the way. We are going to take a step back, right smack dab in the middle of all this awards frenzy. We're going to take a look back in time 1 year and talk about the Best Picture winner of 2014, Birdman. So that will be an exciting conversation, and if you're lucky, and I mean really lucky, you might hear for the first time in Cinema Faith history another voice on this podcast, a very special man whom I adore by the name of Tim Nelson. So you don't want to miss that. And until then, keep the faith, my friends. I will see you next time.